Welcome to episode 93. Our sponsors this week are Urban Services Limited. With over 12 years experience in delivering well-crafted maintenance solutions, including loft and annex conversions, roofs and complete modernisation in London and the surrounding counties, and on top of that providing scaffolding throughout the UK for homes, schools, offices and specialist telecommunications scaffolding. I can't say that three times in a row quickly. Urban Services Limited deliver the results you need to the highest calibre. Go to urbanservices.limited to find out more. How are you, dear listener? How has your week been? What with Russia, UFOs and Roald Dahl's books being messed with, it's been a bit of a headfuck week. But this is what music is for, a way to analyse and therapise your brain. And this week's guest is just 1 month from releasing an album called Everything's Fine. And having listened to it a lot, everything certainly is, while my ears are ingesting it. Its creator is Matt Corby, Australian, sickeningly talented, but also super charming and a great laugh. We talked photo shoots, live shows, COVID, getting signed by one of Mumford & Sons. We break down his incredible Lonely Boy cover, YouTube It Now, his love for Radiohead's Kid A, and how one of his new album's standout tracks, Manies, came to be. If my words have any influence on you whatsoever, pre-order this album now. You will not be disappointed. If the groove on this album was water, it would fill 100 swimming pools. Please follow me on Twitter at RealFeedbackPod and go to realfeedback.co.uk for details on my London shows. Sadly, I've had to cancel my Comedy Store show on February 28th with Diane Morgan and Alexi Sal, but we are looking to try to make it happen further down the line. But at the Prince Charles Cinema on April 11th, yes, it's a new date, is acting, exploring, greatest voice ever, Brian Blessed. Head to realfeedback.co.uk for ticket links. Back to Matt Corby. Great bloke, great chat. Here we go. This isn't an interview. This is a conversation. This is Real Feedback. What number am I today? Is it a whole day of interviews?
Only interviews. Number three.
Yay!
Third and final.
Okay.
Which is good. I did do like this photo shoot this morning, which was actually, it's kind of fun. I've never had so much fun at a photo shoot. So I didn't really count that as like a thing.
Right, yeah. What happened at the photo shoot then? What was the concept?
They just gave me a bunch of clothes to put on and they gave me this really nice, like they didn't give it to me. They took it back straight away.
Gave me this, can I keep this? Yeah.
It was the nicest suit I've ever put on. It's like a Ralph Lauren suit.
Oh.
And I was like, I looked at the stylist. I was like, I need to buy this. And she was like, I'll email them. And she sent them an email and they wrote back. She's like, it's not even out there. Not even out yet. You can't have it. And I was like, fuck you guys.
Yeah. Don't dangle that carrot and then take it away from me.
I was like, why am I wearing this then?
Yeah.
It was so funny.
How was the London show? I don't know if Sarah, it's from your PR, Sarah told you that she very kindly offered me guest list. And I arranged it. I had a friend come in then I got COVID on the weekend. I was supposed to also be there. I had the option of coming down to the record label today and doing this face-to-face.
Right.
Because the only time I've had to do that in the last couple of years is a couple of live shows I've done, but otherwise it's all Zoom. So I was like, yes!
Yeah.
And then, then I fucking got COVID.
Ow. I was like, that's a height of irony. Hey, that's unbelievably funny. Yeah, yeah. Well, not for you.
So. No. I can laugh now because I feel all right now. But pretty much. But
wasn't your first run of COVID? Was it?
Was my third. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I got it 2 weeks before the first lockdown in the UK. So I got sort of. I feel like I got the first
the
run
alpha
of it.
Strain.
Yeah. And because I was going, I've got no taste. I don't know if that's got anything to do with it. People are going, it's not COVID, that's just something else. And then it came out about the taste. It's like, ha! See? I did have COVID.
And you've all got it now.
the thing is because I'm a musician myself, so 3 days after I had it, I didn't know what it was. I thought I'd just had a cold. I did a gig in the West End.
Yeah.
You know, sort of super spread. And then the day after that, it was my son's birthday party. So I'm going out hugging people and making drinks. Hey, do you want another beer? Do you want a coffee? Oh, auntie, kiss. Mum, kiss, you know. Just thankfully, there was no awful repercussions from that. But I could have just been this super spreader that killed everyone.
Yeah. You could have been patient zero. Who knows?
I could have been, yeah.
Did you go to Wuhan by any chance?
But how? Sorry, back to you, which is what we're about. How was the show, the London show?
Not to rub it in, it was really good. Because I had a great time. I think the band that I've been traveling with just for this last couple of weeks been incredible. Such incredible players. Like I met two of the three of them this last 10 days, and we pulled the show together in 4 days of rehearsals, and on our way we went. And we only played 3 shows, and they were just sort of small underplay, which was so nice, actually. Just a small room, intimate and very personable. Yeah, I loved it, actually. It's one of the best little runs I've ever done.
What made me feel better was I was told that you're doing Shepherd's Bush, and I have asked if I can mention it. I can.
I think we're doing Hammersmith, actually.
Oh, Hammersmith. Okay. Well, they said I can come to that, so I'm not as upset now. So
very good.
Good. Well, the thing is, I mean, we'll get on to one of the things about the album. All your music that just completely blows you away. So my music background is kind of like garage punk rock, not punk rock, but alternative rock, I guess. So you don't really need to be technically proficient, really. You just need to be able to write a decent tune and be able to play it loudly. So one of the things that I'm really blown away by what you, and you say about how good the musicians you had were, and I thought they must have been, because the bar is so high listening to your music on what, everything that's happening. And I'm going to get more into that in a bit, that I've just listened to going, I've been playing guitar for 30 years, and it makes me feel like I've been playing for 2 months. Not necessarily the guitar, just all the music in general. I'm just like, wow. We'll come on to that anyway. But so your label is in London, but obviously you're Australian. So how did that happen? Because I didn't realise that the owner of the label is Ben from Mumford & Sons.
Yeah, Ben Lovett and Kev Jones. Yeah.
Right. So was it how did a guy from Australia get into the ears of some guys in London?
Yeah, I moved over here, or kind of half moved. I was back and forth a lot from when I was about 18 onwards. I came over originally because I'd been in Australian Idol as a kid, and it really messed me up a bit. I was kind of like, I need to leave, you know. I wanted to have a career in music, and I think it's very hard to have one post a show like that. So I was like, I'll go to a new place and I'll just start again. And that's kind of what I did. Like, I knew very few people. I went around basically kind of playing open mic nights and stuff for 3 or 4 months. And my manager, who's really fresh at the time, we'd only just started working together. He's English, and his brother worked in publishing and also managed another artist. At one of the last days that I was supposed to be in the UK, I think he felt really sorry for me that I'd just been like a fucking vagabond, fucking running around London with no friends. And he put on this show at Ravenous, you know, in like on Portobello Road.
Right.
It was actually a beautiful show with Matt Haggerty, who's Matthew in the Atlas. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Amazing songwriter, most beautiful voice. It's like he can sing really beautifully, but it's like it sounds like he smoked like 1,000 cigarettes before his son. It's like this amazing tone. But we just played the show, and Jamie, who was the manager of Matt and then my manager, they invited a bunch of people, and they were friends with the community guys like Kev and Ben and Ian, who started the night originally, which was just a music night. They all came down, and they were just about to start the label, and they kind of told me afterwards, they're like, oh, we're sort of going to start this record label, and you know, you and Matthew and the Atlas should be the first two artists that we work with. And which I was like, that sounds like the best thing ever. And I came back about a month later, and I made an EP, 5 songs with Kev playing bass and Chris, who actually was playing drums for me on this run, which was so sick, like to be reunited with him. And the rest is kind of history. Like the communion guys were so, they were, yeah, they extended the olive branch when no one else really would at the time or saw anything in me. And it was funny, like, I guess I didn't even end up signing to them for long. And then I ended up signing a deal with a major. That all unfolded and got dropped and whatever. I made a couple of records. And now it's come full circle and we're back together.
Yeah. So how did you, what sort of music were you doing on the open mic nights? Was it just an acoustic guitar?
Yeah, I was just playing. I would make it my mission to shut people up. That was my thing. I was like, if I made the pub quiet, who didn't give a fuck about the music going on,
yeah,
I'd be like, job well done. Like, yeah. So I used to have funny little, like, I used to stand up there and play a couple of things and then just wait. Like, wait for an uncomfortable amount of time until people were like, shh. Like, the other people. I'd like sing a couple of notes and people were like, ooh, he can kind of sing. And then, like, I'd just be like, this still. And then they'd be like, what the fuck's going on? And
is, like, did we need to call a medic? Or?
Is he having a stroke?
Yeah.
So, so yeah, that was, yeah, it was, I had written a few songs at that point in time. I mean, I had enough songs to play a set, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, funny time.
Well, it's interesting because I saw your cover online of Lonely Boy with Black Keys.
Yeah.
Completely different version, but fucking awesome. And so, I mean, that's because one of my jobs is a cover band musician in London. Boring. But we do Lonely Boy, and we obviously just do the kind of the original version. So yeah. I know the song inside out. I played it about 300 times in the last 5 years. But hearing your, when I saw that you'd done it, I was like, oh, I've got to listen to this. And it was so different, because even when you hear an artist do someone else's song and it's kind of the same, it's still interesting because you're hearing, you know, whoever do that song. But you did such you totally made it your own. And I mean, how do you, I don't know if you've done that with other songs as well. Is it just that you think, well, it's, I mean, this is like three chords, isn't it? The whole song. So do you just go, well, how can I make this more interesting? I have to make it me. I have to put my personality over it. Is that the thinking behind it?
Like, that was an extremely stressful day. Well, it was an extremely stressful 3 days leading up to it, because I'd asked to do other songs. I had two other songs that I put forward first. And like, the people at Triple J were like, can you do something more modern? So I put forward another thing and they're like, not that. Like, just tell me what you want me to do. Yeah. And they were like, well, what about Lonely Boy? And this was the night before. And I was supposed to be there in the morning. And I was like, I was at some party, you know, I was like 19 or something, 20. And I was just like, oh, fuck. And I just went to my car. I was just like sitting in my car going like, how am I going to do this? And I had this little zone of like just drop D kind of bluesy thing that I would always kind of do. And then I was like, I figured out that like, in that. And I was like, ah, fine, sorted. And like, I didn't even think anything more about it. I didn't even practice the song. And I got in there in the morning, I was like, I'm going to need the words. And they're like, don't you know the song? I was like, well, no, I mean... I was like told to do it like 2 days ago yesterday. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it was one of those moments. Everything just luckily panned out, but I kind of had no idea what I was really doing.
You look like you knew what you were doing, but in your head, you just go, fuck.
Yeah, no, that was the whole time. I was just like, fuck, 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 fuck. What are the words? Fuck, 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 fuck. Oh, what am I doing? Fuck, fuck, fuck. And yeah, it was fine. It was funny though. I think I actually did kind of well under pressure. It's just, yeah, it was that was a high pressure scenario. And I think I knew it in my head. I was like, you really can't mess this up. And then whilst I was doing it, I was like, you really should prepare for things more. it was a good lesson.
I do that often. I half learn a song and think, you know, I'll put the lyrics on a tablet. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I'll be fine. You know, I've tried it in my kitchen. And then you're standing in front of a room of people and you go, oh, fuck, this feels a bit different now.
It's so different.
Yeah. And I've had some real bad moments where I thought, shit, should have definitely prepared for that. We tried to do a cover of
It was just soon after David Bowie died, and we did Suffragette City, and it was a club in Covent Garden that's not there anymore, sadly. But there's Saturday night, I think it's about 500 people when it's full, and we got about halfway through, and I realised that the bass player is playing a different part of the song to what I'm playing because I've gone wrong somewhere, and it got so bad I had to stop the song. And it wasn't even like, yeah, don't worry, mate. It was just everyone just looking, and they didn't even want to hear it anyway.
How dare you?
Yeah. All right, we'll do Valerie. Fucking hell. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. it was a nightmare. What is your go-to instrument? Because I read that you're one of those people that plays pretty much everything, and you have done on albums and EPs. So if you're kind of not having a writing session, if you're literally just... you know, you're at home and you just want to pick up the guitar or whatever because you love music, would you sit at a piano? Would you pick up a guitar? What would be...
It would be piano.
It would be piano, would it?
Yeah. I mean, every now and then I get in there like a guitar-y mood. It's very rare, though. Like, I kind of get annoyed at myself with guitar. It was one of my first instruments, but I never got past a point with it. Like, I some of my friends started playing guitar really late, and they are amazing. Like, they just really were dedicated with all the things. And I guess I just never was. And I always used it just as like a way for me to sing. It wasn't like I never approached it with that kind of technical mindset. But all the other instruments post that I've learned, I've really put in time with, and I've just sort of push guitar aside, just going, yeah, well, that I can kind of do that. It's fine. And yeah, I mean, I've been picking it up a little bit more recently and just being like, I should get actually good at this, you know. But piano is, it hits me in a spot. Like when I do things, I feel a lot more fulfilled when I learn stuff. Like, and I'm really intrigued by just reharmonization and like how much information you can push with like quarterly and harmonically with piano. I mean, you have five extra notes, whereas guitar is kind of like, this is the rhythm and this is the notes, you know, and the scaling is annoying as fuck. Whereas like piano is just like this beautiful two-dimensional, like that's low, that's high. This is nice.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, the principles of the instrument are easier in piano. And I think it conveys a lot more emotion. You have to be so good at guitar, honestly, to like get to the point where it's like, yeah, that's great. Drums were my main one for ages just because I wanted to get tight enough to play them on records. And when I was a single man and had space and time, that's all I did. I was like, I just sit at home and just be like, and then like 6 months later, I'd be like, I was like, oh, I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I think I have once you figure out one and how to break it, I think it applies to all the other ones. Like you just have to have that kind of willpower to be like, no, these all have their weird muscle memory tricks and their ways of thinking and their scaling systems and stuff, and well, with melodic instruments and stuff. I think it gets addictive, like, you know, to pick up something new and be like, how does this work? Like, and like being shit at it and being like, fuck you, I'm gonna figure it out. Like, it's really fun. I really love it.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Is it when you're in the studio and it's, you know, it's creative times, you're in there for a purpose. Are you going, oh, what's this? You know, what does this do? You know, if you go to a new recording studio and they've got something on the wall that you might not recognize, you go, can I have a go of this? Are you intrigued by that? And you just want to like get a tune out of it?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, recently last couple of years, I've been really into just signal flow with synths and how they work. And I bought a few really great synths. Like I bought a Moog One recently, which is broke the bank, but it's kind of annoying, but it's really, you can do so much on them once you understand what all the signal flow, how it works and how to route things. And Yeah, I remember going to a bunch of studios and just being like, what's an oscillator? And they'd be like, oh, fucking hell. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It makes noise. And he's like, oh, okay, thanks.
what sort of noise?
Yeah. What's a sine wave? It's a certain shape of frequency, mate. Fuck off. Yeah. Sing your song, you dickhead. Like, yeah, it was very funny.
I did a course about 20 years ago now, and it was a MIDI sequencing course. Can't remember any of it now, and never did anything with it, of course. But I remember at the time them going talking about white noise, brown noise, pink noise. I'm going, what? And different shaped sine waves.
Yes.
What? Yeah. Totally blew my mind. Just give me the guitar back. I'll see you later. Yeah.
It's actually really cool once you, like, your ears start to do weird things once you put like a visualized image to the sound or something. Like, I've loved working with that Moog just because everything's so visual on it. And like, yeah, there is actually a whole section that is colored noise. And like, that's one of the sends you can like blend in to like the other three oscillators. It's very hilarious. And I just kept going through like, I think I like pink the most.
Yeah.
And like, pink's like, and the white's like,
and Brown's like, yeah. Ah, scary sound. Yeah. So how did you land on, because generally when people start a band, there's a, you know, they got a drummer, they got a bassist, a couple of guitars, maybe some keys, but there's so much going on, and I get that you've built to this record, but there's so much going on with, and it's such a specific style of music. Was that always the style that you were going to do when you started writing songs? Because they're very complex and groove based, you know, kind of, there's loads of different sounds in there, which we'll come to.
Yeah.
But it must be, what was the influence? That's such a boring question. But what was it growing up that pushed you? I mean, I know you kind of had a bit of a religious upbringing, which is probably the sort of choral stuff and the choir stuff. So I wonder if you could just talk a bit about the sound of the style of songwriting and genre.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely the church stuff, I think, made me a great singer. I think it boosted me as a performer from a really young age, because I'd get up and play in the worship band at 9, you know. And my dad loves music. He would always play me stuff that just he loved from back in the day, which a lot of it was kind of rock and roll, good rock and roll. I mean, Dad, you know, introduced me to Zeppelin and AC/DC and like the Beatles. And, you know, I remember he, for Christmas when I was really young, someone got him like their Beatles number one CD.
Yes.
Just like, cause it just came out. And I was just like, man, like these songs are annoyingly catchy. I was like, they were so good that I liked them immediately, but it was not like any of the other music that I'd heard. Cause I mean, at the time it's like me and my sister would with a cassette tape, the top 40, you know, kids, like I think it's called Ugly Phil's top 30 or top 40 or something. I don't know what Ugly Phil does these days, but,
catchy name.
Dad was like, yeah, cool. There's that bullshit. And then there's this stuff. And he never said it like that. He was always just like in the car, like, what do you think of this? And like, he played something from like Physical Graffiti. And I'd be like, that's sick. You know, especially AC/DC, like, dude, groove central.
Yeah.
Like craziest groove for rock, you know, like it, man, unbelievable. So I guess, you know, he injected a lot of this into me as a kid. And, you know, I obviously could sing from a really young age. And then I think when I was a bit older, I started to, you know, branch out. I had a lot of older than me musical friends. That would be like, oh, you know, me as a 13-year-old, they'd be like, have you heard of Sufjan Stevens? Have you heard of Midlake? Have you heard of like, kind of all these really interesting songwriter bands that are really interesting instrumentalists. And I dive so deep into all that stuff in school, I was sort of half at school, half not at school, just because I was that kid that, sang and had to go to a Stedford's, and I was in the music rooms all the time helping year 12 students with their HSC exams, you know, instead of going to Matt. Like
the Goodwill Hunting of music in this school. Yeah. Get Matt in. Yeah, we've got a problem.
It's like, I think I sang for like six different students, like when I was like in year 7, which is like the first year of high school, for all the year 12 students that were like doing their final music examination, which was, all that stuff was great. But I'm all those older kids were like, you should listen to this. You should. And I'd always be like, cool. My sound as a writer, I only could do what I could do, right? You know, I started off, you know, I could play a little bit of guitar and I could sing. So I just make songs like that. As I progressed further and further, I was like, oh, no one's going to make this better for me. Only I'm going to make it more interesting and better, which is why I started to pick up other instruments. And a guy called Mocky really encouraged me. He's a really great producer, really great instrumentalist, makes his own music. He produced Feist Records and like the Jamie Liddell Multiply album. He used to drum for Peaches, and I came across him randomly. He came to a show of mine in LA when I first went there, and he was like, oh, it'd be really great to meet him, to someone that I was working with at a label. And we set up this meeting, and I just we had this chat about life and music. He's like, do you want to have a jam? I was like, yeah, sure. And he's like, why don't you play the drums? I was like, I don't play the drums. He's like, just, you know what to do there. I was like, yeah, okay. And he started playing, and I just started playing in rhythm with him, and he's like, sweet, let's make a record.
Wow.
You know, that next time you're here, let's write a bunch of songs. And I think he's just like, yeah, you're musical, it's fine, you know. And we made a record which kind of went horribly wrong. There was a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and it was just me and him doing it, it would have been great, but it wasn't. And I probably wasn't even really ready. It's still very much in the development phase. And when we kind of failed, he was just like, just go home and just learn everything, because you want to do it and you're good at it. And just, if you spend 6 to 12 months sitting in a kit, playing the bass, playing keys, you'll be fine. He's like, you'll come up with great stuff. I was like, oh, okay. It's kind of the best piece of information anyone ever gave me, which is kind of just like, I have faith in you. Just go and do the work, you know? And so I guess that's what I did from that point forward. And then I think that's when a lot of my musical influences really came out. I started to get more into like groove music, and I started to get more into like older groove music, like where it all originated from. I think that was always intriguing to me, because I was like, oh, there's all this stuff that's amazing now, but they were inspired by what? And I wanted to know. And so I was constantly trying to find the source of like, you know, why is Jimi Hendrix so good? Because he loved Buddy Guy, you know, like it's like all these things. It's like, just go to the source. I mean, Buddy Guy is amazing, but like he's nothing like Hendrix, but you can kind of see where the progression came from. I guess like I've gotten better at being, I don't know, what's the word? I've gotten better at giving less fucks about like what I think people want to hear, which is definitely the struggle that you are faced with all the time as a songwriter. Cause you're like, I could just venture straight up into obscurity, just do weird shit and hope that like it, you know, someone likes it. But I'm like, no, I kind of know where modern music's at, and then I know what I like, and it's just try and like find the gap, you know?
Well, also, I guess people by having, is it 4 EPs and 3 albums? Well, they're about to be 4 albums. You probably know what songs your fans prefer of yours and what sort of style. And does that make you think, oh God, I need to write a few more of those style? Or do you just think this is, I was talking to, funny enough, you're the second Australian I've had this week. I was chatting to Johnny from DMAs earlier in the week, a couple of days ago.
Johnny Took.
Yeah. Lovely guy.
Legend.
And yeah. I asked him, I said, do you write purely for yourself and hope your fans are on board, or do you kind of take in what works at gigs, things like that, and does that influence how you then write going ahead? So I'm now going to ask you the same thing.
I think I think taking into account what you think people want is a terrible decision. I think it's a natural thing that most musicians slightly do anyway. So it's best to just ignore it because people don't know what they want. Like if you're the one that's the creator, you have to go with what feels right for you. I mean, otherwise we just keep getting a cycle of kind of the same thing over and over again. I think it's a dangerous thought process to take that into account too much. And I definitely have been responsible. I've definitely done that. Like, I've definitely been like, I don't think this will translate. You know, that's always the thing in my head. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, so what? You know, I feel like with this record, like, yes, there's probably still subconsciously that consideration, but I really was just like, when I was happy with what something was, I was just like, sick, don't touch it. It's great. I love it. You know, and I'm just happy. And I just got to be brave and be like, I'm going to stand behind this. Like, who cares if people are going to be like, why are you doing that? You know, because you just have no idea how things are going to be received. And it's just, it's a spiraling, dangerous thought process. So like, yeah, just try and be like, like, you like this, hopefully.
Well, yeah. Well, I think band, I mean, going, you know, bigger mainstream Arctic Monkeys or Radiohead, bands like that, who over the course of albums have completely changed their sound.
Yes.
And a lot of people are on board with it. And again, I was talking about to Johnny about this, even with Nirvana, when they released Nevermind and it was kind of poppy grunge. And then, so then they followed it up with a really horribly sounding to the most of their jock audience album, and it was, whoa, what's this? Where's Teen Spirit on, you know, lost loads of people, but kept their artistic integrity, which I think is, for a proper artist, is important. Is you have to write, you know, you should be right for yourself and hope they're on board. So,
I mean, imagine, like, I wonder what, because I didn't know of Radiohead when, like, I mean, I slightly knew of Radiohead when OK Computer came out, but just because some songs went big, right? I mean, there were some huge songs on that record. And then they put out Amnesiac, like a year later or 2 years later. And that was it's maybe still to this day, one of the best electronica records I've ever heard.
Wow.
Like, because it has all these elements of beat making in it, but it's so obscure and interesting and such a jump from what OK Computer was. And I was like, I wonder what Radiohead fans thought of that at the time. Like, in hindsight, you look at it and you're like, fucking genius. Like, cannot fault them.
Yeah.
You know, it, like, Packed Like Sardines, that song. Is that what it's called? Packed Like Sardines?
In a crushed box or something, yeah.
Yes. Like, still maybe one of my favorite songs ever of theirs. You know, it's like, and like, just how brave. You know, for them just to be like, I don't give a fuck, like, what people think we are. I'm just gonna be like, bam, bit crush the shit out of everything. Like, you know, create this incredible, moving, breathing, half electronica, half real thing, which I don't know at the time. I mean, again, I would have been 10 or something when that came out, or 11. So I don't know really what the rest of the scene was doing around that. There could have been other artists that they might have taken it from or whatever, but I feel like that's not the case.
I think you're in early 30s, aren't you?
32, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm 45. So I was very much a grown up, but I think actually Kid A came out first and then soon followed up by Amnesia.
Sorry. That's
exactly. But yeah, I remember because I used to get NME and everyone's going, what the fuck? Because hints of it in OK Computer, because The Bends is such a guitar-driven album, and then OK Computer started to bring in the sort of technological side of things.
Yes.
You know, hang on a minute. But then obviously Kid A, but the opener Kid A, Everything in Its Right Place, that's one of my favourite Radiohead songs.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Unbelievable song.
Mm.
Just brave. They're just brave.
Well, I want to talk about your album because...
Sorry.
No. Because most of the... albums that I get sent from the PR company very kindly give me many musical guests are guitar bands. So when I clicked on the link and listened, I was completely surprised because I didn't know what to expect. And I thought, this is very different to what I would normally talk about. And I was worried was thinking, oh, do I, is my music not? Because I like to, because I'm a musician myself, it helps me the conversations with my guests. And I'm listening to this album thinking, oh my God, I wouldn't have a clue how to play. Even if you gave me a chord sheet, I'd be in the room going, I'm sorry, you know, I can't do it. So I didn't know if I was even in a position to do it. But anyway, I thought, no, it's good, let's do it. And the more I listen to the album, certain albums that I get sent have a real profound effect on me. And this is one of them for quite a few reasons. The main one is, well, there isn't really a main one, but it sounds like an album that I've been listening to that people have been listening to for 40 years. But at the same time, it just came out yesterday. It's got this a very clever way of sounding like a classic album that I'm familiar with the songs, but at the same time, it sounds completely fresh and new at the same time. I don't know if that was an intention, but and the grooves on it.
That's cool.
And, you know, as a middle-aged white man, it's embarrassing the sort of moves I'm pulling in the kitchen while I'm listening to it, you know, making dinner or whatever. I've got rhythm when I'm playing the guitar. I do not have rhythm on a dance floor. But there were so many different sounds going on, so many different styles. And I feel like the production deserves exactly the same bigger nod as the songwriting does, which I'm assuming from what I've read on you is, I mean, you self-produce or co-self-produce
yes
everything, don't you?
Yeah. This record in particular was my biggest production effort that I've ever had. Yeah. And, you know, we did it all in my studio. I can very happily say that I engineered the majority of it as well, which I also love that side of it. I'm getting way more into, you know, just the finer detail of like why that sounds good there and why it doesn't sound good there, you know, as far as mic positioning or just like the levels of compression, just wanky stuff. But like,
yeah, but this is what I'm listening to it. Sorry to interrupt you, but listen to it on headphones. I mean, I've probably listened to the album about 20-25 times in the last few, but every time I listen to it, my mind's going to, well, my ears are going to something else that's on the track. So with something like Reeling, I'm now listening to a little off guitar, the offbeat guitar, and what instrument's that going on over there? Or I'm listening to the group, or I'm listening to how you've layered the vocals. Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, fucking hell, the harmony's going on here. Like you've got, what song is it? That's For Real. That's kind of got that Bon Iver start on the vocal style. And then there was a song on one of your old albums, Monday. It's just vocals and percussion. If I'm not wrong, the whole track.
Looped. Yeah, I just looped.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really know what my first question would be about this album, but but when you've written a song, one of the songs, what are you probably writing it on a piano from what you're saying, and then what you go, okay, what sort of, how do I want to add to this song, and do you just test harmonies and instruments?
I think it's like, I mean, a lot of the times at the start of a day would be like, I have these chords or I have like this beat. That's normally the start point. And be like, you know, I remember when we wrote Reelin', Chris was like, can you just play really simple on the kit? And I was like, okay, sure. He's like, I just want to hear like, boom, crap, boom. I was like, sure. So it's just like, boom, boom. So I just tried to make it feel like it was fun to play to. And like, actually, Chris came up with those chords. I fucking love those chords. It's in Reelin'. It's like, I think he'd like just met this girl and like life was great, you know? And like, he had just been with her that morning, like hanging out. And then like, he'd come to the studio like, hey, what's up, baby?
Pass me the guitar.
And he had these like sexy chords. And I was just like, oh my God, like, this is the song today. This sounds great. Like, you know, and as soon as those two elements get put together, it just snowballs, you know, like it evokes a feeling in me. And like, I'm like, ooh, that and this, let's get that synth. And like, oh, what about, you know, let's do this kind of D'Angelo thing. And like, you know, it starts to just, you get immersed in all the potential of it.
Do you then hear other melodies for parts
all the time?
So you add something and then you go, oh, I'm hearing this now. And then
yes.
And what should that be? Should that be a piano? Should that be a string, brass?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I also think like it's the way that I work most of the time anyway. Like I annoy my partner so much because I'm like, is this a song? And I'll be like, and she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, that's a song, hey. And she's like, and like,
are you doing that with your mouth or you're playing on a bass? Are you actually
humming it? No, I'm like, actually singing it. Oh, but then I'll be like, I'll go and play on the bass. Right. And I'm like, surely this is a song. And you know what? This, I heard this bass line the other day in my head and I was like, that's a good bass line. And I like recorded it. And randomly, I was in an airport, and I was like, that's my fucking bass line. I was like, it wasn't something. I was like, yeah. I can't remember what song it was, but, like, I was so disappointed. I was like, did that just subconsciously get into my brain? Was it just a really, like, standard bass line that these people would buy?
Yeah.
It was really funny. But, yeah, I mean, I just hear, you know, I think when you do it so much, you just kind of things in your brain just start going, like, this is a song. Like, I'm just piecing it all together. It's like, really, it's quite fun. It's probably the beauty of learning a bunch of stuff too, because you start to like think in all these different languages harmonically and rhythmically, and I love it. It's really, and that's why I love the production stuff too, because I think I have lots and lots of fun musical ideas that I probably couldn't use for myself and my own what the parameters of like the Matt Corby project is. So it's really nice to be working with all these other artists and be like, what do you think of this? And they're like, oh, that's dope. Like, yeah, let's write to that. It's like sick, you know? Yeah, it's a good time.
Well, as someone who, I don't know if everyone would have the same thought process, well, people who don't write songs wouldn't, but as a songwriter of much simpler types of song, I just like breaking it down, listening to it and just being so intrigued at the decisions made in certain places and when you drop stuff out and when you bring stuff in. And it was like, I don't know, it was just really, it really opened up my mind in a big way. And I felt that all the sounds, going back to the production, the sounds of every instrument and the mix was exactly how it should be for those songs. Everything sat where it should be for me. And one of the things I wanted to ask is apart from, I think, Four Real is kind of slow, but it's all groove all the way. And then the last three songs, bang, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly, Manies.
Very good.
Yes.
Correct.
Because I did this with Johnny the other day on a DMA's track and I got it completely wrong. is it called JLA? He went, no, it's JLA. I was like, fuck. Okay, so Manies. So, yeah, the last three tracks on this album suddenly are... It's like not a complete U-turn, but it's the mood right yes. down. This Manies track is beautifully, like it's a finger pick acoustic track. And the last three tracks are all really kind of subdued. Was that decided after you recorded, or did you want to end the album with the kind of, okay, let's go out and a quiet?
I think there's like more than a million possibilities of a 10 album track list, like how many ways the tracks can fit together.
Wow.
My friend Kieran said it to me recently. Like he'd done the math on it really. It's like over a million. He actually had the specific number, which I can't remember because I was drinking beer. And it wigged me out because I was in the process of making a track list. I guess that's how the conversation came up. And we had a completely different track list for the record. And I was just like, I was like, it's not right. I'm so sorry. We're going to have to delay this a couple of weeks because I need to change things. And the way that it is now, it was almost like, I actually did it with my dad. I was like, cause my dad's, he's very, we have this very close connection with what I do. And he's been such a supportive, so is my mom as well. But like dad's very zoned in on things and it's always, you know, what are you doing about this? And like, have you finished this yet? Which is very funny. But we sat down together and like he'd listened to all the songs a bunch of times and like that was just what we came up with in the end. And I kind of love how that works. I mean, it definitely wasn't intentional at first, but once everything was finished and you could hear it in context, that to me that was like that was the best way through it, you know. Mm. Which probably isn't correct because there might be 100,000 other better ways, but I mean, even that Manies song that was like that came about so naturally. Like I didn't even intend on putting a song like that on the record, but we were just kind of bored one day. And I think we'd probably exhausted a lot of these groovy ideas. And I remember was doing something the night before at home, just sitting on the front porch of my house, and had all these little zones in this open D tuning. And I showed Chris like, oh, you could do this and this. He's like, just record it. Just go and set some mics up and we just put a click on and just see how far you get. And I sat down, and the recording that you hear on the album is the moment that I sat down.
No way.
All the guitar work, other than when I sing, is that moment of just being like, hey, well, here's like the idea, I guess. And like, as soon as, like, I even sang with it, which is why I had to overdub half the guitar. Every time my vocals come in, it's like a new guitar, like trying to mimic what I did in that moment. When I was just kind of in happy, free flow, let's just create something mode, which I'm so proud of. And I think that's why I built the studio, because I'm like, I need to capture those precious, precious moments where you're actually in a genuine flow. And yeah, it's like a fun anecdotal thing that happened, but it's something I'm really proud of. Like, yeah, I didn't have to think beyond the point of like, this just sounds like a song to me, you know? Yeah, I think that song became, it's maybe my favorite song on the album. Like, it's a real creeper, but like, the more I hear it, the more I'm like, I'm really proud of this. Like, I'm so glad that this is on a record, you know?
When I hear a song that I really love that kind of hits me, there's a band I really love called War on Drugs. I don't know if Lost in the Dream is probably my favorite album in the last 15 years. And any one of those songs, I can picture a scene from a film, like a cool scene from a film. And that's when I know that I really like a song, because it kind of, can it be a movie song? Yeah, but not Danger Zone Top Gun movie song, like a cool independent movie song. And Maney's did that for me. I could kind of see, I was sort of picturing this movie in my head with it. You get that bad boy synced, is what I say.
Yeah, I know.
Shami the Moolah. Yeah, yeah. So what's the album's out March 24th. What's the plan around release time? Will you still be over here? Are you back home?
We'll do a run through the States, just a sort of some small shows, and then we'll do an Australian tour, and then we'll come back to UK, Europe, in September. And then we'll probably do the big shows, and I might have a slightly bigger band depending on how much money I have. Yeah.
How do you do that when you're adding brass and things to your albums?
I know. It'd be great to tour with, you know, a couple of horn players. But again, it's just, I mean, touring's becoming more and more expensive. Like, flights are more expensive. Everything's crazy at the moment. A part of this trip that I've just done was to kind of play with these new guys that live in the UK, because I've never really played with anyone outside my Australian band, who are like my dearest, closest friends. And it's, it was really weird for me to come over here sort of by myself and like not have my like weird musical family around me. But it's actually been incredible. Like, and I've loved every no shade on my crew, because they're amazing too. But like, I've loved every second of meeting these guys and playing with them. And I mean, they're such good musos. Like, they were annoyed at me. Like, the bass player was like, fuck you, bro. It's like, I'm like, yeah, I kind of did it once, and then now you've got to do it every night, and it's not my responsibility anymore.
Mine was a total fluke. I don't know.
Yeah, and it was. It always is. Yeah, but it's like, yeah, whatever. I put it down. It's like, yeah, it still feels good. I'm like, I wouldn't have to learn it ever again. Thank God. But yeah, it's, yeah, poor Kieran's job.
I reformed my old band, and we did an album in September. And I laid down a guitar part that I came up with there and then, because it needed something there. And we haven't been back in the studio to rehearse since, just because of jobs and, you know, just time, whatever. I've no idea how to play that bit. I'm going to have to sit down and listen. And
it's hilarious, eh?
And work it out, because I did it once. I've literally played, the album comes out in a week. And
you better get on that.
I've only played that bit once in my life, and that was when we record. Does that sound all right? Okay, or twice. Once when I worked it out, and it's like, record before I forget it, and then did it. So there are though. That's like you were saying earlier about Maney's, just those lovely little moments in a studio.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's
most of what I do. Like, because you're kind of put under pressure. It's like, okay, I've got the bass in my hands now.
Yeah.
That's like, All right, give me like 20 minutes, you know, I'll find something.
Get yourself a sandwich, come back.
Yeah. Seriously, I always remove people from the room because I'm like, don't put pressure on me, right?
No.
And then like 20 minutes later, I'll be like, I got it, guys. It's all good. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. And then that's it. No, forget about it. It's gone. It's gone forever. And it's like, oh, I got to isolate the track, send it to the bass player. And he's just like, this is annoying.
Can I do it slower? No.
Yeah. Well, you can practice it slower.
Yeah.
We're at this tempo live. Yeah.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you, Matt. And
likewise.
I wish you all the best with this album because it is absolutely cracking. And I can't wait until September. I mean,
yes.
Guide about Tuesday, but September is on the way, and I'll wave to you from the side.
Very good.
Yeah. No, I can't wait to see it live. I really can't. It's big fan of the album, and thank you for coming on.
No worries. Anytime.
Nice one.